Good evening. It's November 5th, 2023. The time is 2016 Eastern Standard Time. We're now on Eastern Standard Time. 2016, now 2017 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. Now, I'm not sure what the static noise was yesterday, whether it's because I'm touching the chassis of the laptop. So I'm going to try using my other mouse. Today, since the mouse problems have solved themselves, since I stopped or changed the plug-in point for the mouse, stopped using the dock that I was using, and plugged the mouse into another location instead, humble people recognize that the creation is Jehovah's, and that by his wisdom is, or that his wisdom, and by his wisdom, the creation is superior to anything man devises. The best that man can do is to subjugate himself under the mighty hand of Jehovah God and try to learn how to harmonize as much as possible with all true teachings. Man didn't create the human body and can't improve it. One can, however, improve one's health with God's help through prayer and study. If the body lacks something or if one is taking in toxins in significant quantity. In other words, we can reduce the toxins. It's another way. Prayer assists in the adjustment of dietary practices. Humility is required in order to learn what to adjust. The body communicates its needs when one is attentive. The attentiveness must continue every day and persist. A person has the capability to know one's own body far better than anybody else can ever know another's body. This is why it is so important to learn about oneself. No two bodies are exactly alike either. So we need to study, but then also to experiment with our own bodies. The complexity of the human organism is so subtle that it ensures that no one else can study our own organism better than we. And that we will have varied problems. Therefore, the sooner we begin studying it, the better. Now, since the time I wrote this, that's the end of today's Born and Raised study, paragraph 11 of chapter 10. And we fast approach the end of chapter 10. But since I wrote that, I've learned that we don't always know. If we're eating the same food every day, we don't always know what's causing what. When I was overdosing on vitamin D, I didn't know I was overdosing on vitamin D. And yet I kept taking vitamin D in massive quantities. Sometimes we need the help of someone else just to give us a different point of view and to help us to think a little bit harder about what we're doing or to go back and look again. If I had looked at how much vitamin D I was taking, I would have realized. And I did look once I was asked by the person I consulted. That person knows who they are, but when I went to get some help for my apparently death-dealing condition, I was dying. I was really having trouble. I was dying, and I went to get some help from a healthcare practitioner, and somehow just the idea that when I was asked what supplements I was taking, that caused me to realize. When I was asked to bring all my supplements and to produce them for inspection, then I realized what was happening. I immediately realized it was very easy to find out that it was the vitamin D. It was a very easy thing for me because I always check all my supplements. I'm always aware of how much of everything I'm taking. It's just... The exception was vitamin D, I wasn't aware of. And I suddenly realized that's what it was. But of course, I did many other things. I checked many other things, like the vitamin A and iodine and things like that as well. I wasn't sure, because I was taking a lot of vitamin A and a lot of iodine at the time also. But now I'm back to a semblance of health, hopefully, maybe, possibly. You never know. So that's it for today's study. Proverbs 17 and 4. That's the born and raised study for today. But this is our proverb for today, little ones. The evildoer is paying attention to the lip of hurtfulness. A falsifier is giving ear to the tongue causing adversities. Interesting. In other words, the opposite would be the corollary, that a good person, an honest person, doesn't listen to troublesome words. In other words, that's what that says. But I mean, there's so many things that you can find problems with, or you can have problems in so many ways in the world, that it is good to have a counselor. It is good to have a multitude, actually, a multitude of counselors. If I had been, you know, questioning all of my supplements and how much I was taking of each one, I would have found the problem. And I would have known that I was overdosing on vitamin D. It seems fairly obvious. Although I did find an actual scientific or healthcare journal paper, a medical journal paper, that said that 1 million units of vitamin D per day was not toxic. I even saw that somewhere in an actual medical journal. Of course, it's not just the vitamin D. Yeah, that's true. It's not just the vitamin D. It was also all the calcium I was taking, together with the vitamin D. That's what was killing me. Hypercalcemia. That's what was killing me. The hypercalcemia caused by plenty of vitamin D, first of all, but also a ton of calcium. I was taking a ton of calcium. All my water was from my natural well water, which was just that water was my water, and it was just 300 parts per million or something like that of calcium. It was a huge amount of calcium. 300 milligrams per liter or something like that. And I was drinking 4 liters a day, and it was, you know, I mean, I was taking, but I was also, but that's not too much calcium, but I was also consuming a lot of dairy as well. I never did try and figure out how much calcium I was taking every day, but I was drinking 4 liters a day because I was dehydrated because of having too much calcium in my blood. It was crazy. And then the water itself that I was drinking had more calcium in it. It's just in the area in which I live, it's got a lot of calcium in the water naturally. And I don't have a water softener in the house. That is a long story, isn't it? Let's read 1 Samuel. Let's read 1 Samuel chapter 5. We saw how the Philistines captured the Ark of Jehovah. I found a fantastic paper, though, I want to show you. If we have time, I'm going to show you, even if we don't have time. It's this paper by Leslie McFall, The Chronology of Saul and David, from 2010, the Journal of the Evangelical Theological Society, volume 53, page 475 to 533. It's a long article, and virtually none of it I agree with, of course, because his chronology of Saul and David is going to be, you know, his own, and it's like every other chronologer, they differ from every from the genealogy and each other. So, but the incredible number of facts that he refers to in his article is absolutely phenomenal. He even gets into the number of generations of the priests from Eli and his sons, and then their sons, or one of their sons, and then the son of that priest. So there's a generation here. What's it called? Ahiah, I think he's called. Let's see if we can find him. Where is he? I need to make this bigger if I can. Does it get bigger? Yeah, it does. Here's Ahiah. Right. He was Ahiah, the son of Ahitub, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli. And he was the priest who accompanied Saul. So we see that that was generations after. So if Eli's sons were born in 1200, let's say 30 years roughly per generation, or 27 years each, we can do it per generation. But if there's from Phinehas, we have Ahitub and then Ahiah. It's two more generations. But we have to then wait until that priest gets to be 30 years old, or Ahiah gets to be 30. So Phinehas, if he was born in 1200, and then his son is born in 1170, let's say 1173, Ahitub, and his son is born in 1146, that's Ahiah, then 30 years later he could be priest in 1116, which is only 4 years before Samuel became judge. In 1112 BCE, so and then Saul became king in 1100, and so he could still be priest, of course, for during the reign of Saul. It works perfectly well chronologically, but there's a lot of things to learn from our research, and this is a magnificent article I just discovered yesterday. It's what I used to do, was discover a new fantastic source every day, just about. In fact, I think it was every day. I discovered a new source every day that changed everything for my understanding. It was phenomenal. And that is what one needs to do if one's writing articles that are of any great import to do with chronology or anything else of import in history. We need to have sources of information. But the research in that man's article is incredible. Incredible. And yet he still doesn't get all the facts that we have in the genealogy, of course. He doesn't have them all. First Samuel, I mean, I want to talk more, but we have to read. As for the Philistines, we'll get to it. It's exciting. As for the Philistines, they took the Ark of the True God and they brought it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. And the Philistines proceeded to take the Ark of the True God and bring it into the house of Dagon and station it beside Dagon. Then the Ashdodites got up early the very next day, and there Dagon was fallen upon his face to the earth before the Ark of Jehovah. So they took Dagon and returned him to his place. He's just an idol god, a statue. When they got up early in the morning, the very day after, there Dagon was fallen upon his face to the earth before the Ark of Jehovah, with the head of Dagon and the palms of both his hands cut off to the threshold. Only the fish part had been left upon him. That is why the priests of Dagon and all those going into the house of Dagon do not tread upon the threshold of Dagon in Ashdod down to this day. And the hand of Jehovah came to be heavy upon the Ashdodites, and he began causing panic. Excuse me. And striking them with piles. Piles. Some kind of inflammation outbreak, boils, for example. Namely, Ashdod and its territories. Struck with piles. And the men of Ashdod came to see that it was so, and they said, "Do not let the Ark of the God of Israel dwell with us, because his hand has been hard against us and against Dagon our God." Consequently, they sent and gathered all the Axis lords of the Philistines to them and said, "What shall we do to the Ark of the God of Israel?" Finally, they said, "Toward Gath, let the Ark of the God of Israel go round." So they brought the Ark of the God of Israel around to there. And it came about that after they had brought it around to there, the hand of Jehovah came to be upon the city with a very great confusion. And he began striking the men of the city, from small to great, and piles began breaking out on them. Hence they sent the Ark of the True God to Ekron, and it came about that as soon as the Ark of the True God came to Ekron, the Ekronites began to cry out, saying, "They have brought the Ark of the God of Israel around to me to put me and my people to death." Consequently, they sent and gathered all the Axis lords of the Philistines and said, "Send the Ark of the God of Israel away, that it may return to its place and may not put me and my people to death." For a death-dealing confusion had occurred in the whole city. The hand of the True God had been very heavy there, and the men that did not die had been struck with piles. And the cry of the city for help kept ascending to the heavens. So we see that sometimes when we think that we don't deserve something, when we have something very precious in our possession and we feel we don't really have any right to have that in our possession, we might have difficulty too, and we might suffer all kinds of mishaps and things go wrong. But in this case, we see it was actually disease was actually happening. They were encountering, contracting disease of the sort that it caused piles or outbreaks of boils on their skin. So it was really the power of Jehovah, that this was a very powerful thing, the Ark of the Covenant of the True God, that the Philistines had no business having in their possession. And they even came to the conclusion, we have to get rid of this thing. We've got to give it back. You know, let it return to its place. That's what they said. Verse 11. So, remarkable statement. And the chronology is impeccable. The genealogy is impeccable as a chronology. Absolutely impeccable. But there's still a lot of work that can be done on it. And there's still examination to be done to make sure that we're not missing and we're not making some mistake. And double checking and further checking of the genealogy is in order, and that's what I've been doing. We've been doing it, but this new article is enabling me to do a lot more checking, because there are a lot more facts to consider now that I didn't even have consciousness of, even though a lot of them are from the Bible itself. Just hadn't gotten around to making these realizations yet. Let's do Jeremiah Chapter 9. Oh, that my head were waters, and that my eyes were a source of tears. Then I could weep day and night for the slain ones of the daughter of my people, Jehovah says. Oh, that I had in the wilderness a lodging place of travelers. Then I would leave my people and go away from them. For all of them are adulterers, a solemn assembly of treacherous dealers. And they bend their tongue as their bow in falsehood. But not for faithfulness have they proved mighty in the land. For from badness to badness they went forth, and they ignored even me, is the utterance of Jehovah. Guard yourselves each one against his own companion, and put your trust in no brother at all. For even every brother would positively supplant, and every companion himself would walk around as a mere slanderer. And they keep trifling, each one with his companion. And they speak no truth at all. They have taught their tongue to speak falsehood. They have tired themselves out merely in doing wrong. Your sitting is in the midst of deception. Through deception they have refused to know me, is the utterance of Jehovah. Therefore, this is what Jehovah, the God of armies, has said. Here I am smelting them, and I have to examine them. Because how otherwise shall I act on account of the daughter of my people? Their tongue is a slaughtering arrow. Deception is what it has spoken. With his mouth, peace is what a person keeps speaking with his own companion. But within himself he sets his ambush. Because of these things, should I not hold an accounting with them, is the utterance of Jehovah, or upon a nation that is like this, should not my soul avenge itself? Over the mountains I shall raise a weeping and a lamentation, and over the pasture grounds of the wilderness a dirge. For they will have been burned so that there is no man passing through, and people actually will not hear the sound of livestock. Both the flying creatures of the heavens and the beast will have fled. They will have gone. And I will make Jerusalem piles of stones, the lair of jackals, and the cities of Judah I shall make a desolate waste, without an inhabitant. Who is the man that is wise, that he may understand this, even the one to whom the mouth of Jehovah has spoken, that he may tell it? On what account should the land actually perish, be actually burned like the wilderness, without anyone passing through? And Jehovah proceeded to say, on account of their leaving my law that I gave to be before them, and because they have not obeyed my voice, and have not walked in it, but they kept on walking after the stubbornness of their heart, and after the Baal images about which their fathers had taught them. Therefore, this is what Jehovah of armies, the God of Israel, has said. Here I am making them, that is, this people, eat wormwood, and I will make them drink poisoned water, and I will scatter them among the nations that neither they nor their fathers have known. And I will send after them the sword until I shall have exterminated them. This is what Jehovah of armies has said. Behave with understanding, you people, and call the dirge-chanting women that they may come, and send even to the skilled women that they may come, and that they may hurry and raise up over us a lamentation. And may our eyes run down with tears, and our own beaming eyes trickle with waters, for the voice of lamentation is what has been heard from Zion. How we have been despoiled! How much we have felt shame, for we have left the land! For they have thrown away our residences. But hear, O you women, the word of Jehovah, and may your ear take the word of his mouth. Then teach your daughters a lamentation, and each woman her companion a dirge. For death has come up through the windows. It has come into our dwelling towers in order to cut off the child from the street, the young men from the public squares. Speak, this is what the utterance of Jehovah is. The dead bodies of mankind must also fall like manure upon the face of the field, and like a row of newly cut grain upon after the reaper, with no one to do the gathering up. This is what Jehovah has said. Let not the wise man brag about himself because of his wisdom, and let not the mighty man brag about himself because of his mightiness. Let not the rich man brag about himself because of his riches. Let the one bragging about himself brag about himself because of this very thing, the having of insight and the having of knowledge of me, that I am Jehovah, the one exercising loving kindness, justice, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I do take delight, is the utterance of Jehovah. Look, days are coming, is the utterance of Jehovah, and I will hold an accounting with everyone circumcised, but still in uncircumcision, upon Egypt, and upon Judah, and upon Edom, and upon the sons of Ammon, and upon Moab, and upon all those with hair clipped at the temples, who are dwelling in the wilderness, for all the nations are uncircumcised, and all the house of Israel are uncircumcised in heart. That's the end of Jeremiah chapter 9. A much more flowing presentation for the first time in the book of Jeremiah, wouldn't you say, little ones? Seems to have more readability and more of a natural flow to it. Hebrews chapter 9, for its part then, the former covenant used to have ordinances of sacred service and its mundane holy place. For there was constructed a first tent compartment in which were the lampstand and also the table and the display of the loaves, and it is called the holy place. But behind the second curtain was the tent compartment called the most holy. This had a golden censer and the Ark of the Covenant overlaid all around with gold, in which were the golden jar having the manna, and the rod of Aaron that budded, and the tablets of the covenant. But up above it were the glorious cherubs overshadowing the propitiatory cover. But now is not the time to speak in detail concerning these things, After these things had been constructed this way, the priests enter the first tent compartment at all times to perform the sacred services. But into the second compartment, the high priest alone enters once a year, not without blood, which he offers for himself and for the sins of ignorance of the people. Thus the Holy Spirit makes plain that the way into the holy place had not yet been made manifest while the first tent was standing. This very tent is an illustration for the appointed time that is now here, and in keeping with it, both gifts and sacrifices are offered. However, these are not able to make the man doing sacred service perfect as respects his conscience, but have to do only with foods and drinks and various baptisms. They were legal requirements pertaining to the flesh and were imposed until the appointed time to set things straight. That was the law covenant of Moses, which they were still under at the time this letter Hebrews was written. And if it was written by Paul, Paul died before the destruction of Jerusalem. So we believe in the mid-60s of the Common Era, about 5 years before Jerusalem was destroyed, something like that, or less than 5 years, perhaps, before the destruction of the temple. But at this time, they were still performing services at the temple when this was written. However, in verse 11, when Christ came as a high priest of the good things that have come to pass, because Christ had already come, he'd been born in BCE 6 and been baptized in BCE 26 and been crucified in BCE 30 of the Common Era. He'd been baptized in 26 CE. He'd been born in BCE 6, but baptized in 26 CE and crucified in 30 CE in the genealogy. That's the chronology that we have, the best available chronology for the life of Christ. However, okay, when Christ came, he's already come when this was written, because this is after 30 CE. It's in about 65 or so, or after 65 maybe. Do we know when this was written? Let's check. Let's check Hebrews. Paul, we think, wrote that. Oh, it's 61. Okay, 61. So Hebrews was written before Paul wrote the books of Timothy, the letters of Timothy. So this is about 61 is when we think. Or anyway, the main point is it's sometime in the 60s of the Common Era. And it's not any earlier than the time when Christ came, nor is it after the destruction of the temple. So when Christ came as a high priest, right, he was baptized in 26 CE in the genealogy of the good things that have come to pass when he came through the greater and more perfect tent made with hands. Okay, he came as a high priest. He went to heaven, that is, after his resurrection, this is talking about. He went through the greater and more perfect tent not made with hands, that is, not of this creation. He entered. No, not with the blood of goats and of young bulls, typical of the Mosaic Law Covenant, but with his own blood, once for all time into the holy place and obtained an everlasting deliverance for us. So he had the value of his own blood. That he'd paid the price with his own blood to obtain this precious offering that he could give when he went to heaven. For if the blood of goats and of bulls and the ashes of a heifer sprinkled on those who have been defiled sanctifies to the extent of cleanness of the flesh, how much more will the blood of the Christ, who through an everlasting spirit offered himself without blemish to God, cleanse our consciences from dead works that we may render sacred service to the living God? So that is why he is a mediator of a new covenant, in order that, because a death has occurred for their release by ransom from the transgressions under the former covenant, the ones who have been called might receive the promise of the everlasting inheritance. For where there is a covenant, the death of the human covenanter needs to be furnished. When a man writes a will, or a woman writes a will, it doesn't come into effect until they die. For a covenant is valid over dead victims, since it is not in force at any time while the human covenanter is living. Consequently, neither was the former covenant inaugurated without blood. Neither was the former covenant inaugurated without blood, for when every commandment according to the law had been spoken by Moses to all the people, he took the blood of the young bulls and of the goats with water and scarlet wool and hyssop, and sprinkled the book itself and all the people, or sprinkled the tablet itself and all the people, saying, "This is the blood of the covenant that God has laid as a charge upon you." And he sprinkled the tent and all the vessels of the public service likewise with the blood. Yes, nearly all things are cleansed with blood according to the law, and unless blood is poured out, no forgiveness takes place. Therefore, it was necessary that the typical representations of the things in the heavens should be cleansed by these means. That means the typical representations, those are the things on earth, and of the Mosaic law. By means of the Mosaic law they were cleansed, but the heavenly things themselves must be cleansed with sacrifices that are better than such sacrifices. For Christ entered, no, not into a holy place made with hands, which is a copy of the reality, but into heaven itself, now to appear before the person of God for us. Neither is it in order that he should offer himself often, as indeed the high priest enters into the holy place from year to year with blood not his own. Otherwise, he would have had to suffer often from the founding of the world. Jesus would have had to suffer often if he had to suffer every year from the founding of the world. That's a long time. But now he has manifested himself once for all time at the conclusion of the system of things to put sin away through the sacrifice of himself. Jesus was the spirit creature who was with God and through whom all things were created. So he's been around for a long, long time. And as it is reserved for men to die once for all time, but after this a judgment, so also the Christ was offered once for all time to bear the sins of many. And the second time that he appears, it will be apart from sin and to those earnestly looking for him for their salvation. That's the end of Hebrews chapter 9. We are just at the end of our study. We've got about 30 seconds and less than that even. It's November 5th, 2023. The time is 2049 Eastern Standard Time. We've made it to Eastern Standard Time last night. It happened after midnight last night. I love you very much. I hope you enjoyed today. This is the weather getting more wintry and unpredictable these days. In my behalf, I'm Ward Green, and in my behalf, this is Crow, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.